the Skinny and Hooli Show.
Oh, listun varna. Listun varna. How's it going there, everybody?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Welcome once again to the Skinny and Hooli Show. I'm your old friend, Mike Houlihan, and with me on the phone is my old pal, Skinny Sheehan. Skin, what do you say?
Hey, Hooli, how are you? How are things in Chicago?
Pretty bleak. Not Florida like where you are. Getting real sick of it, yeah. I can tell you that. Hey, you're listening to the Skinny and Hooli Show. We're brought to you by Flood Brothers Disposal, our old pal Bob Flood. We're coming at you out of Cicero, Illinois, WCEV, we're Chicago's ethnic voice, 1450 on your AM dial. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're all over the place. If you ever miss a show, folks, you can always catch the podcast, usually up by Monday, at skinnyhooli.com. Okay, what's going on over there?
Hey, everything is wonderful, Hooli. We're playing golf today. Now I'm out to dinner with the guys I went to high school with.
Oh, good.
Great Polish guys. Yeah. Bill Shea, Jim Wogan, and Tom Collins and their wives. And Mary Beth are out to dinner. So we're kind of relaxed down here. It's very, very nice. And people are nice. It's a great place to be.
I can imagine.
Chicago.
Well, we got Pat Fitzmaurice on the show tonight, Skinny. So he says hello.
I know. They do a great job. The paramedics do a great job.
They certainly do. Hey,
it's a tough job.
We talked about this earlier, but I know you got that big event coming up February 27th over at Carnival. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's an event that actually we're honoring Chris Kennedy.
Who announced for governor today. He announced he's running for governor today.
Yeah, I just heard that. It's amazing. But Chris has been supporting Special Olympics the whole time he's been in Chicago. And, you know, well, his family's been involved day one. You know, last year we honored Ann Burke, who was one of the co-founders, and Chris's aunt, Yuni Shriver, was one of the co-founders.
She started Special Olympics, yeah.
Yes, yeah, so we're really excited about that, and now he's running for governor, that's what I hear, so that's interesting. But it's Monday, February 27th at Carnival. The tickets are $100. All the proceeds go to Special Olympics. This is not a political fundraiser. The proceeds, we arranged this with Chris, last October, before there was any of that stuff about. But anyways, it's great. We're really looking forward to it. And he's been really good to us in Special Olympics in Chicago. So I just, if people want information, they can go to sochicago.org, sochicago.org, or they can just call somebody. They can call you, Hooli, or anybody. They give me Skinny's telephone number. I'll give them the information.
Skin.
They can call me. I'll give you my number. 773-447-6601.
I'm going to write that in the ladies' room wall later tonight. Hey,
probably
Skinny.
In there already.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Skinny, your girlfriend was on the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh,
I was watching.
Yeah.
She did a good job.
She did
Lady
a very
Gaga,
good
we're
job,
talking about. Yeah.
Lady Gaga, yeah. She's been so good to us, too, with Special Olympics.
You think she's going to do the polar plunge again?
I don't know. We got our fingers crossed. I know she broke up with her boyfriend, but she's, you know, we're trying to get her back for the third year in a row. And that's our big, big thing, which is on March 5th this year at North Avenue Beach, the polar plunge. Come down, jump in the lake. You got a hangover. It's fabulous for it. If you don't have a hangover,
it'll wake
you
up. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Skin.
So, anybody? All right. Well, you say hello to Pat for me and say hello to all everybody else. And, enjoy, Hooli. Okay, thanks for calling.
Okay, pal.
And
God bless.
Go
we'll talk
Skinny
to you soon.
Hooli.
All right. All right. Thanks.
All right. We'll see you later. Bye.
Skinny's girlfriend is Lady Gaga because he's very involved with Special Olympics, and she came down two years in a row and did the polar plunge. And
she did a nice show on Sunday.
She what?
It was a nice show on Sunday.
What about that game?
Yeah,
it was terrific.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yes, it was great. She did a nice show. She kept her mouth shut. You know,
well, just she entertained.
Be an entertainer. Don't give us any of that political crap. You know.
Why divide? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just all it is division now.
Yeah. All right, so folks, we are very honored tonight to have Pat Fitzmaurice. He's a chief with the paramedics for the Chicago Fire Department. Has been for 40 years, right?
Well, I've been on the fire department for 43 years. I've been a chief for the last 5 or 6.
Okay, so he's a very colorful character. I met him on the Chuy Garcia campaign. Now, so 40 years as a paramedic, though. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a long time.
And you're working now on the west side?
Yeah. My district is, my assignment is what they call 454. It runs from Austin to about Western, from Roosevelt to Fullerton.
Holy
and
cow.
And it's got, let's see, ambulance 10, 23, 15, 52, 33, 64. Some of the busy, probably top five or six busiest ambulances in the city.
Do you work just nights? Or
we work a 24-hour shift.
Oh, wow.
So I start at 7, 6:30, and I go to
6:30 a.m. or p.m.?
Yeah, 6:30 a.m. I go to 6:30 the following morning. If I went, if I started at 6:30 p.m., they'd never get rid of me. It'd stay forever.
Yeah. When do things get crazy?
They've been crazy. Not even it hasn't changed. It's been really no significant lull. Usually winter brings you a lull. You get busy with, like, you know, a lot of flu and asthma and things like that. But the violence tends to, you know, drop down. Hasn't at all. And you're still getting 3, 4, 5 shootings a day. And it's just, there's just no end in sight. It's come summer, it's going to be another bloodbath.
Oh, man. And so do you, you were on the scene at these things, right?
Right, yeah. You know, I get there. You know, I'm out on the street pretty much the whole day. You know, my crews are out there running all night long, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. So I'm out there. I want to be out there with them. You know, I want to let them know that I'm there for them.
Yeah.
They don't have to wonder if they need me. I'm coming, you know. And so, yeah.
What are you driving?
We drive a Ford, not Explorer, one of the Ford SUVs.
Is it just you alone in the car?
Yeah, just me.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, no big deal. You know, you just you drive around and listen to the calls. I got a few areas where I could just sit and listen to the calls, and then they come up on our computer screen, and I'll know when, you know, call ambulances in my district get calls. And I monitor the 15th district, the 11th district, the 10th, and the 25th, so I know when they're getting calls, which gives me a jump on some of our calls, you know. The shooting calls will usually go into the police department first.
Yeah.
But I try to go to all the shootings, and we also go to a lot of psych emergencies. Is what they and those are very volatile situations that could, you know, I mean, they could just break bad on you.
Is that like somebody who's just nuts?
Could be anything. Yeah. It could be
a guy's
off his meds. It could be a guy that's bipolar. It could be a guy that threatens suicide. It could be a guy that's family wants him out of the house. It's you name it, you know. And they have a tendency to go violent, and. Yeah. It's a very difficult situation because the police department, they're there, and we're there, and we have the parameters for what we do are different. They're there more or less to make sure we don't get hurt.
Yeah.
We're there for medical reasons. And so when somebody said they were going to kill themselves or somebody's off their meds, we don't get to walk away from it. You know, you can't walk that stuff back. And the police sometimes are, you know, like they're looking at us as we're trying to tell a guy, well, you know, guys, 32 years old, well, you have to go with us. I don't want to go. You have to go.
Yeah.
You know, you've been drinking, you know, and they're more or less standoffish because they don't want to get too involved because they're so much under the gun. You know, as long, you know, they're pretty much there to make sure we don't get hurt. But sometimes it all just breaks bad, and then they're involved too.
And then you got the family there and
family
everything.
Family there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the city says they're going to start training everybody in how to handle these patients. I'm waiting. You know, I keep waiting. When's it going to happen? Because we deal with them all the time. 4 weeks ago, I almost got pushed out a window by a female psych patient. You know, she was in a room. She lunged at the police officer, and the room was covered with all kinds of, you know, clothes and roller skates and you name it. And I grabbed her. And the door got shut, so it was just me and the policeman in there, and she pushed me, and I slipped, and I went bouncing off the radiator, and the other paramedic in the room grabbed me, or I would have went out the window.
Wow.
And she kicked me in the face. She kicked me in, you know. And you're all you could do is restrain them.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have, we don't have a policy on when we could, you know, become an actual combative.
Yeah.
You know, we're there to restrain them. So I try to go on them a lot because those are the calls that could break bad for the paramedics.
What about tasers? Are they using
those? When the police use a taser, we deploy the taser. They will call for the ambulance, and then we'll check the patients out. Usually, we transport them to the hospital to make sure that they've had no ill effects from the taser.
So you've seen a lot of people get tased. What is it?
I've actually seen one get it.
Yeah.
I've seen a few. after effects of it.
Oh yeah.
You know, and they're but you know, once it's over, they're fine. They just don't want it again. You know, they just don't want it again. You know, all I can figure is wet your finger.
I shouldn't be laughing, but I am.
Wet your finger and stick it in an electrical socket because that's what you're going to get. You know, and I mean, it just
oh, wow.
it just turns into the human body into jello.
Oh wow.
And they go, you know, and they don't want no part of it after that.
But it's not so funny when these kids are getting murdered every night.
No,
no. That's
terrible. There was a great article in the Tribune the other day. The guy wrote about how, as a reporter, he's tired of the violence and tired of, he remembers his job now when the dead people, it's like he's counting the dead.
Yeah.
And, I don't
remember. Who wrote that? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't think of his name, but he used to work for John Cass.
Oh, I know. Will something.
Right.
Will Lee, I think his name
right.
is.
Yeah. Great, great article. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, well, it's us. You know what I mean? That's the way I look at it. And, I was thinking to myself, and I told my wife, I go, I'll go one better. It's terrible. You know, I'm in the back of the ambulance, and the blood is almost over your shoes. I mean, it's just, that's an exaggeration. But you're thick, the floor is just thick with blood.
Yeah.
And we, it was a Sunday. We had a... kid just happened to go walking into a store, and he came out the door as some other clown was going in, and they wanted to hit the other guy, and so he just opened up and he hit this kid, and he was shot up pretty bad. And
was it automatic, or was it just
a semi-automatic pistol? They just opened up on him.
Yeah,
they don't care. I mean, these guys aren't marksmen. They're not known for front sight focus and all of that.
Yeah.
They shoot whoever. If they want to shoot me and you're sitting here with me. They don't care, and if you get hit, they don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sociopaths. Life means nothing to them. And he was laying in the stretcher, and he asked me, he told me, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. Am I going to die? And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, no, you're not going to die. But I knew.
I mean,
I knew he was not going to make it.
How old was this kid?
Probably 12, 13 years
old. Oh, my God.
And his mother was outside. She wanted to go in. And I couldn't let her in the ambulance because I knew, odds are we're doing CPR on this kid in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And so I told her, no, we can't let you in because we need all the room, we have. And she goes, could I just say goodbye to him, and tell him I'll see him at the hospital? So I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, his kid's going to be dead. This is her last time to see the kid. Why can't I just say yes, sitting there?
Yeah.
But any chance the kid had, we had to give him every chance he could get. And sure enough, she went in there. She, told him, I'll see you at the hospital. The police are going to give me a ride. And then by the time she got to the hospital, they were doing CPR on him, and they called it. And it's just terrible. And I've had a number of them, And I don't even, my paramedics will tell you all the time, we don't judge. We're not there to judge.
Right.
A guy shot, he shot. We're going to help him. And it's a pride. They'll ask you if they're going to die. And some of them, like I said, you're lying to their face. No, you're not.
Yeah.
But, odds are you're not looking at the probabilities are very high. Your life expectancy is dwindling. And the ones that aren't going to die, it's almost nice to say, no, you're not going to die. It's going to suck for a while, which is another aspect of getting shot. It's, you get shot. It's not fun. Now you get to the hospital. I mean, they're sticking needles in you. They're sticking catheters in you. They're opening up your chest. They're sticking tubes in your chest. And, the idea that you're in pain, now they get that. We're about saving your life here.
Yeah.
And I tell them all the time, I go, it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
You think it's bad now with what we did. It's going to get worse, And you know the death count would be a lot higher if it wasn't for the work that the paramedics are doing. They're doing a great job. Nobody knows about it. We're the best kept secret in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
A running joke, three or four reporters I know have wanted to ride with ambulances. I always told no.
Yeah.
No, you want to ride with squad one? No, you can ride with the squad, but nah, you can't ride with the ambulance. I don't know why. They don't want to let us know what we're doing. We have tremendous capabilities now. We do what they call an interosseous. It's a drill. Looks like a little wallboard screw gun, just a tiny one, and we drill it into the bone when we can't get an IV, and it saves a lot of life.
No kidding.
Now it hurts. We had to do it to one guy who was awake, and the hospital said, drill him. You got to drill him. And I was with a young kid, and he's looking at me, and I'm like, They said, drill him, man. And you know, this kid howled, like, you know, imagine you drill him right into your into your tibia. But that, you know, all of a sudden you see the fluid running, you know, this guy's got a chance. You have, you know, he had all his veins had collapsed because he was bleeding so bad.
Wow. Now, yeah. You got involved in some controversy over the vests, the bulletproof vests.
Right.
Tell them that story.
Well, it all, you know, I kept talking about we need to, bulletproof vest, you know, we were talking about it, and one day I was off, and one of my ambulances, ambulance 10, was in Garfield Park, and there was a huge crowd in there. It was in the summer,
west side, rough area,
and they were surrounded, and
the paramedics were surrounded,
surrounded just by the crowd, not on purpose, you know, and they're inching their way through when the paramedic got on the radio, and it's the funniest thing, he's a Marine, so he's like, ambulance 10 to Main, we need the police. They're shooting here. Don't let anybody come in. No panic, no nothing, just calm and cool. Well, they literally shot and killed somebody right in front of the ambulance.
Wow.
And he told me later on that the guy shot him and broke off to the right and ran. Had he broke to the left, he would have realized he just shot him in front of two paramedics, and he might have opened up on that. So I talked to a couple of my friends on the department, all combat Marines, and they all said, one thing was, if you're going to buy a vest, you got to wear it all the time. You can't put it on when you think you need it. It's all or nothing.
Yeah.
And so I said to my wife, I said, you know, I'm tired of talking about it. I'm just going to go get one. And I said, at the very least, lead by example. I'm telling you to go spend $1,000.
Is that what they cost?
I'm
going to
go spend about $1,000, $1,100. Yeah. So I bought one, and, you know, right away, you know, some of the firemen noticed, and they'd be, what do you need that for? What do you need that for? And I said, tell them all the same line. Hey, tonight when I'm out at 3 o'clock in the morning, I'll come and get you if you want to ride with me. I'm out there all by myself, 2, 3 in the morning. You want to come? I'll wake you up.
Yeah.
You can come for a ride with me. And they didn't have nothing to say. But then little by little, they started to see. The funny thing was the police. Police would come up to me overwhelmingly. Smart move. Best thing you ever did. Do you have to spend your own money? Yeah, big deal. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Best money you ever spent in your life, man. Yeah. You guys should all be in them. And a few guys got them, and nobody in the department said boo to me. And I wore it for probably a year and a half at least. And then I had a deputy fire commissioner of operations. Me and him didn't like each other.
Is that McCormick? Is that
him? I can't even think his name.
Okay.
He'll come to me. McNicholas.
Okay.
He was the guy that got lost the job for the DUI.
Oh.
And so he went after me for the vest.
He wanted you wearing it underneath.
He wanted me wearing it underneath, which is not practical.
No.
Because I go to fires, and at the time we were wearing fire coat, and then now I'm going to put my vest on. I'm going to put my fire coat over my vest.
I'm going to have
to take my shirt off to get it. And the beauty of the vest is to be able to open it and air it out because it is hot.
Yeah.
And so I was at the Blues Fest one weekend, and he walked in the van. You know, I was detailed there for 8 hours, 4 hours, whatever. And he sees me in the vest. And I'm sitting there, and I got my feet on the table, and I'm listening to the radio, the fire department radio. And he looks right at me, doesn't say a word, not a word. And I leave, and I'm waiting to get a phone call that he said something about my vest, and he never did.
Uh-huh.
And then someone told me he's going to make a big issue of it. And so then one day I was working, and we had a I heard on the zone, it was about 2:30 in the morning, I was just about to go in when I heard on zone 10, shots fired, Lake and Cicero, it's a bona fide shooting, we're looking for our victims. So I'm like, okay, I'm just sitting there at Cicero and Lake waiting for them
in the
to
car
find victim. Nothing. So I go back to the firehouse. I back in the firehouse, close the door. Next thing you know, a car pulls up to the driveway, honking the horn, flashing the lights. I open it up. They're the victims. In the car. They were shot. There was a girl in the back seat. She was catastrophic. She ended up dying. There was a guy in the front and two other people shot. And as it turned out, they were shooters that got shot at.
Oh.
And they pulled up right in front of the firehouse. And news media got on scene, and it was a picture of me in my vest. And the funny thing was, they had guns in the car.
Yeah.
They had the guns in the car that they used to shoot at the people. And, you know, I'm thinking, like, if these guys would open up on us, you know, I would have been the only guy protected.
Yeah.
And then they told me, direct order, not to wear it. And I told them. I told my chief, I said, they do this. I'm going to the media. They better be ready.
Yeah.
And He's like, Lolly, he laughed when I told him that. I go, okay, we'll see how funny it is, you know, because I knew it. I already talked to John Cash. John's a friend of mine. Yeah. It wasn't going to be, you know, 10 paragraphs and forget about it. It was going to, he was going to pound them like a pepper steak. And he did over and over, day after day. And finally, they relented. Now, they still play stupid games, and they said they wrote an order for it that was basically like, the vest must fit the form and function of the current uniform of the day. What does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, what does that mean? Well, somebody said to me that it's got to be white. And I'm wearing a white vest.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not wearing a white vest. What am I going? You know, Commissioner Santiago asked me to try on a white vest. And I felt like a 10-year-old kid shopping with his mother. And I, no, Mom, I don't want to try it on. I don't like it. And he says, try it on. So I tried it on, and I looked right at him, and I go, excuse me, sir, would you be having cocktails with your dinner? He goes, what's this supposed to be? I look like the head waiter at the Conrad Hilton. I ain't wearing this.
Yeah.
I go, if you don't want me to wear my blue one, you tell me, and then we'll go from there. But I'm not wearing. He goes, I didn't say that, Patrick. Just I'll let you know. And then that was it, and I haven't heard anything since. And if they do, order me out of it.
Are they paying for the vests now?
No.
Everybody's got to pay for their own vests.
Pay for their own. The union's working with people trying to get great Southsider, Patrick Kwan. He's a union steward, a paramedic. He's working to get – he got some outside vendors to cut the price down.
Oh, good.
They're trying to come up with a vest. Still, though, the paramedics' feeling is, why should I have to pay for this? We don't get a uniform allowance. The firemen do.
Oh, you don't?
No, they took it away from us.
That's nuts.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's not. Yeah. It's Chicago.
Yeah.
It is the United States of Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And the exempt ranks needed a raise. They had to get the money from somewhere, so they made a deal with Local 2. We'll take the money from the paramedics, and that'll be your raise money.
Wow.
So they took away our uniform allowance. So they're saying, I don't get a uniform allowance, but yet you want me to shell out $900 for a vest?
Yeah.
So they were, you know, and unfortunately, it's going to have to, someone's going to have to, you know, every summer I pray to God, I say, I hope this isn't the time, you know, but I've been sitting at the stories I told John, I'm not kidding. I'm on Chicago Avenue. I hear gunfire. I look down Kilbourne, and I can see the muzzle flashes.
Yeah.
I can see the muzzle flashes. I'm on Kedzie and Maypole, and I hear gunfire, and you know, it's semi-automatic gunfire, and I can see the muzzle flashes.
Yeah.
I'm sitting at Cicero and Harrison. Call for a shooting on the corner. I tell them I'm on the corner of Cicero and Harrison. I don't see anybody. Next thing I know, knock on my windows. Girl shot. I go,
wow.
Where were you standing? She was right there.
Right next to the car.
Right next to the car, behind the car. I never even heard the gunfire.
Wow.
You know, I was what, the actual catalyst, the actual event, along with Ambulance 10 getting shot at, was I was driving home at Cicero Avenue about 4 o'clock in the morning, and just as I passed Jackson, I heard gunfire, and then I heard the zone break off. We got gunfire at Cicero Jackson.
They shot at the ambulance?
No. That's the one where they shot at the guy in front of the ambulance.
Oh.
So that was had me leaning towards a vest. And then I'm driving down Cicero Avenue at Jackson. I hear gunfire. I don't think nothing of it until I hear the radio crack. Gunfire, and they usually call it loud reports.
Oh, yeah.
And then they verify if it's gunfire or not, and they're going, we have a victim. So I spin around and I make a U-turn, and basically at, say, 310 South Jackson, this poor dude was walking down the street. They drove by down Jackson, and they opened up on people in the gas station. They were probably going westbound, and they opened up on some gangbangers in the gas station, and the bullet hit this guy right in it, literally in his nose, went up and into his brain.
Ooh.
And what the police go, how'd you get here so fast? I was driving right down here. They go, you're lucky you didn't get hit by that. They shot out of a moving car.
Yeah.
You're lucky you didn't get hit by that. That's when I said, that's it. I'm getting it. I ordered it that weekend, and I had it on by Friday, and I'm not taking it off. And if they
keep wearing it,
if they wanted me to take it off, it's going to be World War III.
Okay, we got to take a break, Pat.
Okay,
this has been fascinating. You're listening to the Skinny and Hooley Show. We're talking to paramedic Patrick Fitzmaurice. He's a great Irishman. I'll be right back after these messages on the Skinny and Hooley Show.
Attention commercial business owners, industrial business owners, restaurateurs, apartment, condominium, and building maintenance managers. Flood Brothers Disposal and Recycling Service wants to earn your business. When was the last time you checked your garbage disposal rates? How about making a call or emailing for a free quote today at 773-626-5800 or online to floodbrothersdisposal.com. Flood Brothers is one of the last family-owned and operated solid waste recycling and yard waste firms serving metropolitan Chicagoland. Flood Brothers specializes in expert personalized service, extremely competitive pricing, and is backed by the Flood Brothers family name. Call Flood Brothers today. There's no charge other than a phone call to get a free quote. Call 773-626-5800 or go online to floodbrothersdisposal.com. When your name is on the trucks, you work harder to satisfy every customer. Call 773-626-5800. Flood Brothers Disposal and Recycling Service. Your garbage and recycling waste is their bread and butter.
There's only one Irish pub on the Chicago River, and that's Lizzie McNeil's at 400 North McClurg Court. We spend a lot of time there taping the Skinny and Hooley show at Lizzie's almost every Wednesday night. You can escape the hustle and bustle of Navy Pier and relax at Lizzie McNeil's. Our old pal John Wren is your host. Please say hello when you stop by for one of their ice-cold brews in an authentic Irish pub. One visit and you'll be calling it your hometown hangout. We've been hanging at Lizzie's for going on 7 years now, so join us. When the weather gets nice, they have two outdoor patio areas where you can take advantage of the sunshine and a cafe menu of salad, sandwiches, and appetizers. Lizzie's also has a great private party room that's perfect for birthdays, graduations, and most nights at Lizzie's, you can meet the elite of Chicago's Irish-American community. So stop by Lizzie McNeil soon, right by the river. Tell them you were sent by Skinny and Hooley.
With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. Skinny and Hooley Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
Okay. And we're back on the Skinny and Hooley Show having a fascinating discussion with our friend Patrick Fitzmaurice. He's the chief of the paramedics EMS squad for the Chicago Fire Department.
On the west side.
On the west side of Chicago, where things are pretty scary lately. And they're going to get scarier, right?
You have a lot of kids out there. I mean, a police officer told me about this a long time ago. He goes, you know, you're looking at these, 18 and 19-year-old clowns now. He said, you think it's bad now? Wait till their kids are
teenagers,
13 and 14, because they're with no parental guidance whatsoever. And, that's the problem is that I see is every answer to almost every problem on the west side is violence. It's like unbelievable. I mean, here's a story that probably is, some people don't like it, but it's the truth. I got a call on the west side on Washington about a family disturbance. I went to the scene, and Ambulance 10 was on the scene, and the mother and the father, or father and the mother of the child and the father of the child, whether they were married or not, had a argument. He hit her, she hit him, he hit her with a cable box and split her head open, and she stabbed him with the steak knife. And we got there, and there was blood everywhere, and there were two little kids. One was about 7, and the other one was about 10. And there wasn't a tear in their eye.
Oh,
not
wow.
A tear. Only question they had was, are they going to get to ride in the ambulance? And I remember these police officers there, the hard-boiled, mean Chicago policeman. The guy goes, this is pathetic.
Yeah.
How did these kids have a chance?
Yeah.
We were all, I could have cried. How did these kids have a chance? And then, like I said to the police officer, I said, the problem is right now, they're 7 and 8. When they're 13 and they're sociopaths, yeah, and he smashes your kid in the head with a lunchbox because he cut in line, then what?
Yeah.
And until this cycle of violence is the only answer, they've got to stop that. You know, I mean, I hear Father Flager talk about all this stuff. When's he going to address that issue? Violence does not solve every answer. It's not the answer. And you see it all the time.
He's
you
a know, big faker.
We listen. Oh, yeah, we listen to the. We, and I say, listen to the police radio.
To the priest.
You hear domestic calls over and over and over again. You hear calls for the. They're asking for the police because the grandmother wants the grandson out.
Yeah.
I mean, why? Because he's violent. Yeah. You know, and they. You know, you look at TV now. It's filled with violence. Yeah. But Hollywood says no. It has nothing to do with the violence.
Yeah, sure.
You listen to the rap music. I had my daughter. Do me a favor, make me a rap CD for working out. I was astonished. Number one, it gets you all fired up, but the violence in it, kill, rape, maim. And if you're listening to this all your life as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, you're seeing these violent images on TV. You see this neighborhood where, you know, violence is a common occurrence. How do you escape that cycle? How do you escape that cycle of violence?
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer, you know. And it's got to start in the church and the schools. But somehow you've got to get these kids out of the cycle that they believe that's the answer, you know. I remember walking into a store, and the kid says hello to me, and the mother says, "Don't say hello to him. He's the police." Uh-huh. And I go, "Well, I'm the paramedic, but okay anyway." Yeah. You know, the policemen really are your friend out there. And I see, you know, that's the funny thing is that police are under siege out there.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a bad police story. What about the good ones? What about the good ones? What about when I was working last summer and we got a call from, is the typical down from the unknown, and we went there and there was no one in the parking lot, but there was a building on fire, and the police officers were running into the building to get everybody out, and the woman kept saying it was someone in the second floor, and the police officers tried to get up in the second floor, and I walked up the stairs. Now, I'm not a fireman, but I could tell that no, you can't go in there.
Yeah.
And he was going to go. I'm like, if you go in there, you're dead.
Yeah.
You can't go. And then he goes, "We're going to see you go up the back steps." I don't care. You can't go on that second floor. And the fireman confirmed me later. If anybody would have went on that second floor, they would have died.
Yeah.
There's no way you're surviving. And there was no one up there. We had a fire one time, and it was a back porch fire. And it got a little out of control, but the firemen were, you know, all over the city. But in the 18th Battalion, and they were great. They got the fire put out. And a woman come down, and she was talking about how she thought she knew who did it, and it was all about
a
homeless person sleeping on it. The police were wonderful to her, asking all kinds of information. So that, you know, they made it their business. We're going to get this guy. We're going to grab this guy up. Don't worry about it. And I would see him all the time stalking the police, looking for this guy so that there wouldn't be any other fire. I see it all the time. I had a kid a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago. He was a foster child, and he'd run away from the parents, and the call came in as he may be violent, and we got there, and he wasn't violent, but there was a bunch of police, and the police were talking to him so nice, so kind, telling him, like, you know, you got good parents here. They're trying to help you. You know, the one police officer said, "I see you on the street. Come say hello to me. I'll talk to you." And he's telling me, you know, "You're hanging with these guys." You know, he mentioned a corner. He goes, "You don't want to be with them guys.
Yeah.
Them guys don't care about you. You know, they'll set you up to get killed. They'll set you up to hold the guns. You'll be jammed up. You know, you stay with your parents. Do what they say." You know, and they were able to calm the kid down. So we're going to take him to the hospital. I get to the West Suburban Hospital, and the police are there. And he's sitting in the hospital talking to this kid like he's, you know, like pals. But nobody hears them stories.
Yeah.
You know, nobody hears this. Nobody hears the good work that's being done out there. You know, they're trying as hard as they can. And as a paramedic, that's my life. I don't go home many nights if it isn't for the police, without question. And it's always been that way. When I used to work at Ambulance 15, we'd be up on the third floor of some apartment building at 2:30 in the morning and be maybe documenting a refusal or whatever, or, you know, doing something, and you'd hear footsteps, and it'd be, "Hey, it'd be the CPD. It's 1511. You guys okay up there?" "Yeah, we're great. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate you stopping.
Just checking in on
see
you.
It.
Yeah.
I'll pull over on the street. They'll play. You all right, boss?"
"Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. They're under siege, and nobody backs them. Nobody backs them, whether it's the mayor backing them, whether it's their own boss backing them, whether it's the alderman backing them. Everybody's ready to throw them under the bus.
Yeah.
You know, and then I love it. You know, Rahm never hired the thousand he promised.
Exactly.
He works them like sled dogs. I mean, they you know, I remember
they're
this
all
one
working
guy,
overtime.
One guy told me, he goes, yeah, I'm working overtime. I bought a pool. I haven't been in it. It's August. I bought it in June. I'll probably get into it maybe in September, but I doubt that too. They're working, you know, 10-hour days. Last summer and the summer before, there wasn't a weekend when I wouldn't run into a sergeant in 11 or 15 who would tell me, be careful today. We don't have a lot of cars. We're short cars.
Yeah.
You know, how can that happen? How could that happen in the city of Chicago? He's got money for everything else, but he don't have money to put more police on the street. And I know that's not the only answer, but it's a big answer. It's a big answer.
You know, Trump is threatening to bring in the feds. Do you think that's a solution or what?
You know what? If he's going to bring in the feds, you're going to bring in some federal prosecutors and start charging these guys under federal statutes. That's what I would think.
The gangbangers.
We don't want troops on the street. Right. We want the feds to come in and start charging these guys. We want them to start seizing assets, you know, going after these guys on RICO violations. And back in the police officers. Just back in the police officers. They're busting their humps out there, and nobody gets it, you know.
And there are these lawyers that specialize in suing the police.
Suing the police.
Yeah.
Suing the police. They want to sue the police. They want, you know, they want to force the police to back off and not do their jobs.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is that going to get you? What, allow them to do the street stops. You know, allow them. I mean, I could take anybody he wants. You know, it was funny, the biggest mistake the fire department probably ever made was they had a National Geographic camera crew drive with me, and it was called Drugs Inc.
When was this?
It was about 3 years ago. Drugs Inc. And I was on it, and I would drive up and down, and you know, point out all the drug dealers.
Oh, there's a guy selling drugs.
Yeah. And I told him, and I said, you know what? You know, they asked me about the police, and I said to them, and they didn't put this on the air. And I was, this is what I wanted. I go, you know what? What the mayor and the police superintendent need to do is. You know, there's an old saying, it was a Muslim saying, is the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right.
And what
my enemy's enemy is my friend. Yeah.
What someone needs to explain to the residents is, okay, you may never like the police department, love the police department, but do you like the policeman more than the rapist? Do you like the policeman more than the burglar? Do you like the policeman more than the dope dealer? Do you like the policeman more than the guy that'll burglarize your house and steal your TV? Do you like the policeman more than the one that waits for you to go cash your check and rob you? I mean, when we get old people that are sick because they can't go out and get their medicine because they're afraid of getting robbed, do you like them guys more than the police? Side with the police. You got to side with the police. They're better than the sociopaths that are ruining these neighborhoods. And someone's got to do a better job of convincing them that. You know, it's probably a terrible analogy, but I remember reading a book called The Sheriff of Ramadi, and it was about how in the war in Iraq they were ready to give up on Ramadi. And the Marines said, let's give it another try. And they went in there with a SEAL team. And the whole plan was to not just win hearts and minds, but like when they raided your house, they came back, if you were clean, they fixed the door.
Oh.
And they met with the elders of the town, and they told them, you may not like us. We may be bad to you, but we're not raping your daughters. We're not kidnapping them and making them marry us. We're not doing all of this stuff. We're not walking around and torturing people because I saw them talking to a Marine. And little by little, in that village, the elders said, yeah. And the main message that the Marines gave them was, help us and we'll be gone. help us and we'll be gone.
Yeah.
And if the people in this community would see it that way, help the police officers. Don't not tell them. You know, you saw somebody, you could talk to them confidentially. There's got to be ways.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just going to get worse and worse. And when will it, you know, when does Chicago say it has enough? When there's people are getting shot on the Mag Mile?
Tell me about it.
Well,
they're shooting people on the Eisenhower now.
Record number of shootings on the Eisenhower. Last year, there was a shooting on Columbus and around a Randolph.
Yeah.
Now, from what I was told, there was like about 12 to...
That was during Taste of Chicago. Yeah.
No, it was after the Taste of Chicago. There was about 12 to 15 shots fired.
Yeah.
They didn't hit anybody. They didn't hit anybody. I guess they wounded the one guy. Now, on a Sunday afternoon in June, what are your odds that you could fire 15 shots in that neighborhood and not hit somebody? You know, see, in some ways, Rahm's really lucky, and he doesn't even get it because, you know, he doesn't care. I go to so many shootings where
the streets littered with shell casings, just littered with them. And we got one guy shot two times, but there's 15 casings, yeah. but no one else got hit. Yeah. I had one in August where the guy opened up with an M4, you know, the assault weapon.
Wow.
Okay? He fired 28 shots. Oh. 28 shots. He hit the guy twice. That's got a, probably a range, my buddy would tell me, of over 1,000 yards before the bullet begins to drop. Hit nobody else. We very easily could have had 20 people shot that day.
Yeah.
But we didn't. And, you know, I go to a shooting around North and Austin, same thing. Guy opens fire. The street was covered. There must have been 20 shell casings on the ground.
Yeah.
We had to walk. The paramedics had to walk down the sidewalk because he couldn't dodge all the shell casings, all the yellow tags. And the street was as crowded as could be. But only one kid got shot. So when will it be we're unlucky?
We're lucky that there's such bad shots.
When I pull up and I say, I got 10 people shot here.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that will people wake up then? Or when I, like I said, some guy drives down the Mag Mile and he sees Joe Blow that he wants to open up on, and he does, and he hits five civilians. Maybe if one of their ROM's donors, then, you know, they'll do something.
With that, we got to wind this up. You are a brave and honorable man and a great Irishman. We're so proud to have you on the show.
Thank you.
We've been listening to Patrick Fitzmaurice. He's the chief of paramedics for the Chicago Fire Department. God bless him. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right. Will you come back another night,
sure.
Pat? God
sure.
bless you. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back on the Skinny and Hooley Show after these messages from our friends.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started 80 years ago by their grandfather. Today, 15 members of the family still work together. And as in their grandfather's day, they're service-oriented and believe that the only way to do something is the right way. Flood Brothers are price competitive, so you can count on them to exceed your expectations. So contact Flood Brothers for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. And remember their motto, your rubbish is our bread and butter. So call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or at floodbrothersdisposal.com.
When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy and Sons Funeral Home are third-generation family-owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. Robert J. Sheehy and Son Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this is one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind, was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of success is evident 98 years later as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. The name Sheehy on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family, and you know you never forget something like that. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike Orico, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff, take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves in offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy and Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today. Available at your local grocery store.
And we're back on the Skinny and Hooley Show. Having a great show tonight, boy. I want to give my best to everybody out there. Hey, I want to remind everybody on Saturday, March 4th, our old pal Jimmy Keene and John Williams are putting on quite a show at the Chief O'Neill's The Mighty Squeeze. These are two of the greatest squeeze back players in history. So see if you can get a ticket for that. Saturday, March 4th at Chief O'Neill's The Mighty Squeeze. Also want to remind everybody that Saturday, February 18th, the Pipes and Drums of the Emerald Society, Chicago Police Department, are having their big fundraiser at Bourbon Street. It's Saturday, February 18th from 3 to 8 at Bourbon Street. During the fundraising event, the band will perform several sets along with performances by other bands, including St. Stephen's Green, who's been on the show, but on the crack anyway, and The Emerald Society was formed over 30 years ago and has humbly honored the lives of fallen police officers and firefighters across the country. The band is made up of active and retired law enforcement officers from many different agencies throughout the Chicago area. They've piped and drummed well over 100 honor funeral services for members of the Chicago Police Department, Chicago Fire Department, as well as numerous suburban, county, state, and federal agencies. The band is a volunteer organization, and most expenses come out of their pockets. So help them out. Go to this fundraiser. Get in touch with our old pal Tom Cody at 773-410-9779. Tom's the band manager for the bagpipes and drums of the Emerald Side Chicago Police Department. Saturday, February 18th at Bourbon Street. Be there. Okay, Billy, you know, whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue and I look in the window of Ken's or Wrong's or Hart's or any of those great saloons, and I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist. He says to me, "Hey, Hooli, who died?" James O'Donnell, age 76, of Glenview. He was a Loyola Academy teacher and basketball coach for 40 years. He's born in Clifton, County Galway, and he was the beloved husband of Margie and the father of Kevin, Brian, and Mark O'Donnell, and the great-grandfather of Jack, Margaret, Grace, Brian, Shay, Aaron, Abby, Brendan, Owen, and Quinn. God rest his soul, James O'Donnell. He had a great run there as a coach at Loyola Academy. Also, Mary Catherine Dowd, 92. God rest her soul. She was a graduate of Loretta High School and Rosary College. Mary had a long career as a Chicago public school teacher at Kelvin Park High School. And she was an advisor on the newspaper. Just a great life and a great, great lady. Say a prayer for Mary Catherine Dowd, 92. And I got one more here. Where is he? Oh, yeah. Now, I'm not sure how to pronounce this guy's name. Topher or Toher. Terrence, T-O-G-H-E-R, 90, age 90, native of County Mayo, former spouse of Mary, and the father of Terrence, Anthony, William, Rose, Maria, and Michael. He was waked at Maher's in Tinley Park. Say a prayer for him. He was a native of County Mayo. Terry Topher, age 90. Okay, we can close up the crypt, Billy. And it's great to be back on the old show. Hey, you know what? Tomorrow night on The Crack we have, so tune in actually tonight when you're listening to WSBC 1240 on your Donnie. Listen to me and Gene O'Cooney. We got Gavin Coyle and we have Max Dunn on the show. There's going to be some great music with those guys. But we need to take one more break. And we'll be right back on the Skinny and Hooli Show after these messages from our friends.
Putting your future in the hands of a lawyer can get personal, particularly in personal injury cases. You've got one shot at justice, so you're going to want a guy who thinks like you. Tom Gorman is Southside Irish all the way. He grew up in Holy Redeemer Parish, went to Brother Rice, and yeah, he got a ride to play ball at Notre Dame, played on the undefeated 1988 National Championship football team. After a shoulder injury ended his career, Tom stayed on with the Fighting Irish for his master's in law degree. Tom won the American Jurisprudence Award for trial advocacy at Notre Dame Law School, and he's been a trial lawyer ever since. Tom's practice is devoted exclusively to personal injury and wrongful death. Sure, he's won $1 million verdicts for his clients, but his focus remains on those families and their futures. Tom and his wife, Christine, have lived in Beverly for almost 20 years. And they're raising their 5 kids in Christ the King Parish, Brother Rice, Mother McCauley, and their oldest son is now at ND as well. Lots of folks have to deal with tragedy. It's good to know there's a guy out there you can count on who'll be in your corner to protect your family. You can call Tom Gorman directly at 312-345-7210 and tell him about your situation. Or go to the website, www.gormantriallaw.com. He's a good guy. There's no charge for the consultation, and you'll meet a new friend that's ready to fight for you and your family. Call Tom Gorman today at 312-345-7210 and tell him your story.
If you're looking for an office in the loop, you've got to check out Integrated Office Suites at 115 South LaSalle Street. IOS has an entire floor in this very prestigious building, and they offer the best executive offices, virtual business offices, personalized phone answering, conference rooms, day office usage, administrative support services,
with customized packages with fixed monthly invoices. Integrated Office Suites are convenient and very classy. So get in touch with our friends at integratedofficesuites.com. That's integratedofficesuites.com. Or call them at 312-648-6200 and tell them Skinny and Hooley sent you. Don't forget that number, 312-648-6200.
Joy Jail, one Monday morning, high upon the gallows tree, Kevin Barry gave his young life for the cause. Just a lad of 18 summers, yet there's no one can deny, as he walked to death that morning, he proudly held just before he faced the hangman. In his dreary prison cell, pretty soldiers tortured Barry just because he not tell. Oh, the names of his brave comrades and other things they wished to know. Turning former R will kill Barry, answer no. Won't you shoot me like a soldier? Do not hang me like a dog, for I fall Ireland on that bleak September morn. All around the little bakery where we fought them hand to hand, shoot me like an Irish soldier, for I fought to free Ireland. Calmly standing to attention while he begged his last farewell to his broken hearted mother, who sad grief no one can tell, for the cause he proudly cherished. This sad parting had to be. Then to death walk softly smiling, that old Ireland might be free.
for old Ireland. Another murder for the crown, whose brutal laws may kill the Irish, but can't keep their spirits down. Lads like Barry are no cowards. From the foe they will not fly. Lads like Barry will free Ireland for her sake.
I'm Brendan O'Brien. Back in June of 1976, a guy opened a saloon on the south side called Riley's Daughter. That guy is my dad, Boz O'Brien. Our family's quenched the thirst of the south side for over 35 years. The storied history of Riley's Daughter is familiar to generations of friends who've told me their tales of nights at Riley's they'll never forget. Maybe they met their future wife or hubby at Riley's, or maybe they were there for many of our White Sox, Bears, or Notre Dame trips. Or maybe their grandmother bribed the judges in our Irish soda bread contest. We'll never tell. My family is proud to have been part of that over the years. One thing my dad has taught me is that you can't have too many friends. The legacy of Riley's Daughter has been the people we've been lucky enough to meet who stop by and share their good times with us. Today, we're still on the south side. For the last 10 years at Chicago's Midway Airport, located in the main food court, we provide a Southside Irish welcome to everyone who enters our cozy, authentic pub imported from Ireland. Pull up a stool at Riley's Daughter and make yourself at home. If you're looking for a great drink and a friendly chat before your flight, please say hello to my dad, Boz, my uncle Jimmy, my brother Danny, or me, Brendan O'Brien. If you don't bring us a story, we'll make sure you leave with one. And if you mention the Skinny and Hooley Show, we'll make sure to get an extra ice cube in that drink of yours. See you at Riley's Daughter Midway.
All right, our old pal, Brendan O'Brien from Riley's. Check out Riley's. Hey, Skinny and Hooley Show, we're going to be doing the show March 15th at Riley's. So drop on by out if you're out on the south side. The Skinny and Hooley Show at Riley's Daughter, March 15th. Okay, just want to give a couple more plugs. Don't forget, Byrne and Kelly are coming to the Heritage Center Friday, June 7th or June 9th. That's a long ways up. Next weekend, Friday night, Makeham and Clancy. Tommy or Rory Makeham and Donald Clancy, the next generation of the Clancy brothers and Tommy Makeham. Friday, February 17th, $20 at the door at 8 o'clock. You can't miss that. That's a great, great show. Those guys are terrific. Also, the Irish Whiskey Class has one more session Saturday, February 25th. Join Martin C. Duffy for a tootful over at the Heritage Center. It's only $30. You can taste all his whiskey. He's a very entertaining guy from 4 to 6 in the 5th Province, Saturday, February 25th. And we also have the Wearing of the Green dinner dance Sunday, March 5th at the Heritage Center. A little story about two Irish mothers, Kate and Lorna, were talking about their sons, and Katie says, "My Patrick is such a saint. He works hard, he doesn't smoke, and he hasn't so much as looked at a woman in over 2 years. And Lorna responds, "Well, my Francis is a saint himself. Not only hasn't he not looked at a woman in over 3 years, but he hasn't touched a drop of liquor in all that time." "My word," said Kate, "you must be so proud." "I am. And when he's paroled next month, I'm going to throw him a party."
Okay.
And so, Pat Fitzmaurice, thank you so much for being on the show.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, man, you're the best. You are an Irishman we can all be proud of. So be safe out there, please.
I try.
Keep wearing that vest. And thanks so much for coming on
the
show.
My pleasure.
Okay, and that's we're going to wrap it up on the Skinny and Hooley Show. We will. Oh, maybe we're not. Well, I should be why. Billy is giving me signals here, and I went too fast. I might have another joke here, folks. Hold on. Wait. No, maybe I don't. Anyway, thanks to our pal Sean Ginelli for being our leadoff hitter. He's the best. Tune in tonight for the Hooley's Hooley from 7 to 8 on WSBC. And I guess I'm going to tell you that joke next week, folks. All right, we will see you later. Bye on the Skinny and Hooley Show.
Tune in next time for the Skinny and Hooley Show.
The Skinny and Hooley Show is recorded in front of a live audience.